Hey guys, Ben here. Before I start the podcast, let me tell you what is about to happen here. Two things. First off, my boy Kyle Weida and I talked for an hour, give or take, about all kinds of things. Wizards free agency, Otto Porter, Paul George, John Wall, guys we like in free agency, what the hell do we make of the Wizards in the East and all that kind of stuff. A lot of good stuff. Enjoyed this conversation as much as I've enjoyed any of the ones I've had with Kyle, and I like them all typically. But because we talked for a while, I'm going to break that up a little bit. In addition, I also have a bunch of friends of the podcast, people. I asked folks, give me a minute or two on what you think is the most interesting part of the upcoming offseason part of the year for the Wizards. And give me a free agent that you think the Wizards can target. Got a lot of different responses. I'm going to play for you that as well. So I'm going to put this into two podcasts. I think this one will be myself and Kyle. The second one will be the second part of myself and Kyle, along with all the other folk. Make sense? Ignore whatever I say in there about the order, because I've changed my mind. But you'll figure it out. Anyway, here we go. Myself, Mr. Kyle Weida. Getting you ready for agency. July 1st is a day away, so we'll start listening. We'll get everybody ready.
You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome back to another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. I'm talking to you on a Thursday night, but you'll probably be hearing this Friday morning, I will guess. This is going to be the last podcast before free agency really, starts July 1st, more or less. So that's what we'll be talking about here. Helping me do that talking at the moment will be our boy, Mr. Kyle Weida from truthaboutit.net. He is walking the streets of parts unknown while we're doing this. So hopefully he doesn't stopped for jaywalking or mugged, for God's sakes, I guess. I mean, let's hope you get through this podcast clean, walking the mean streets of your parts unknown place.
Well, no, I'm pretty safe. I'm in Brooklyn parts known, but I'm just walking around the McCarran Park track right now. So there's soccer going on, people stretching, some girl doing her breakdancing routine, different things that you would expect to happen in Brooklyn.
You know what? I have to say, I have not really been to Brooklyn. Well, I mean, I haven't been in years, at least not to the, where it's become the hipster paradise. Well, give me the biggest, what's the biggest difference between living in Brooklyn and living where you did over sort of in the Mount Pleasant-y sort of area?
Yeah, so, I definitely live in hipster paradise, if you will. It's almost too hipster. I live in sort of Williamsburg, Greenpoint. But the two things I realized about Brooklyn...
Have I told you my dad grew up in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, and that was in, the 30s? So I'm pretty sure it's different.
Nice. Pretty sure it's okay. Different. Well, you have to come up here and we will visit the block he was on.
Oh, I remember he told me the address so many times. I totally 100% will do that. Go to the address just to see what the hell's there. 95.
Nice. So it's a plan.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. So I think what I realized quickly when I got up here, Brooklyn has 5 million people in it, so there's so many different neighborhoods to explore, much less hanging out in Manhattan or whatever. But the other thing is, and I think one of my friend, my good high school buddy, Chris, put this in a good way. You think about 8th Street in D.C. and, how that has changed a lot, but now it's sort of a hip area to go. And he's like, man, New York or Brooklyn, they have 100 8th Streets. I mean, maybe that's exaggerating, maybe that's not, but he's right, because you can live on a quiet street and go in any direction, and there will be something to do, something to see. So, I love D.C. Yes, live in New York, be a permanent thing. I will make it back to D.C. one day, but it's nice to change things up a little bit.
Can I just tell you how little I get out? And by the way, let me just say, but before I go too dark deep here, Kyle and I are going to talk free agency, but I also asked a bunch of other people, friends of the podcast, people you've never heard from before, folks from Bullets Forever, Wizards Extra, the Chris Mannix Show, Yahoo Sports, a bunch of people have given us 1 or 2 minutes of their time to talk about what they see as the biggest concern, most interesting thing, free agents they want to target, whatever it is about the Wizards heading into free agency, which again essentially starts July 1st. It basically is already happening as we already start to see these moves, Chris Paul trade and so on. So that will be part of this podcast along with whatever Kyle and I randomly get to here. H Street Corridor, you know what? Can I just tell you? I didn't even know that existed until the other day. I had to drive from my buddy's office in downtown D.C. out to FedEx Field, and the Google Maps took us some random way that went down, like, the H Street Corridor. And I was like, where the hell am I? What is this? What is going on here? I was like, I had no idea that existed. I mean, they had, like, a Whole Foods.
Oh, it's amazing. And when I, you know, when I first moved up to D.C., I was 10 years old. I lived a block away from 8th Street on G Street between 3rd and 4th. You know, granted, Capitol Hill, a nice area, but 8th Street was completely different back then. Now they have all sorts of stuff. They even have the trolley cars there, which was a whole debacle on the D.C. scene in terms of how long that took to get up and running and if it's even worth it. But yeah, that's just sort of that's just one example of how DC has changed so much. Not to get into too many DC non-Wizards things, but yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting because we're talking about how much things have changed in DC, and the reality is with the Wizards, it's still to me unclear how much anything is going to change from last year's team. See what I did there?
That was a great segue because especially since Grunfeld has been around for so long, and I believe you might have been at his press conference the other day where I don't know if it was Todd or someone else asked about his contract and his status, and he's like, what do you say, I'm basically here until I'm not.
Yeah. No, I mean, oh, he's definitely that's definitely not changing no matter how many people seemingly want that to happen. I guess it's like with most things, the people who complain the most are the ones we hear. So I don't know how many people look at last year, a 49-win team with the core of players that he got. Obviously, maybe there's a lot of people who view that as that's not such a bad thing to be. And worst case scenario, even if the Wizards more or less bring back their whole team, I don't think Bojan Bogdanović is going to come back unless something changes dramatically. And, you know, we'll see what happens at center. But even if they just bring back their basic team and replace Bojan Bogdanović with a comparable shooter, and they bring back the same team, you know, there's no reason why the Wizards, with some good luck, can't be in that position again, maybe even win a few more games. That doesn't mean they're going to contend with Cleveland or potentially Boston, I guess, for the East title. But, you know, considering how many years they were a disaster and have been a disaster, having, you know, I sometimes I do feel like everybody just wants to ignore it. Last year was a lot of fun. Like, I said, like, there were points that season where the most fun I've had covering this team the whole time I've been doing it. So I really hope we can all, like, remember, hey, you know what? It's supposed to be fun with sports, and the Wizards were a lot of fun last year, and John Wall, Bradley Beal, like, what else do you kind of want other than that? Homegrown talent, exciting players who are on the rise. You know, I get it. There's things to be concerned about, but, you know, don't overlook the fun if you're just, you know, constantly viewing of, ugh, Jan Vesely, ugh. You know, last
yeah,
I get it, but
yeah, no, I'm with you, and I think what fans want is exactly what John Wall and Bradley Beal want. I mean, if their expectations are going up, it's okay if fan expectations go up, and yeah, fans can be unreasonable, but this is a critical summer, and I think, and I'm sort of fresh off listening to your podcast with Kevin Pelton, which is very good, by the way. I just had one issue with it toward the end, and maybe we can discuss that later. But Otto Porter, this how he's handled this summer is the most critical decision Ernie Grunfeld has been faced with in the Ted Leonsis era. Do you agree with that?
I don't know. I mean, I guess I'd have to think about it. The most critical decision in the Ted Leonsis era. I don't know. I mean, you know, obviously you could have argued, like, you know, how they handled the Durant thing slash what happened last offseason. Maybe it wasn't one single decision. But, you know, giving Jan Mahimi that contract to sort of put them in a weird spot now. You know, if they, you know, so I don't know. But, I mean, look, it's there's no doubt for 100 different reasons. I'll have you explain why you used to think that. But, yeah, there's no question whether they keep Otto Porter, whether they let him go, whether they signed a lot of money, whatever. Like, what that decision is will have ripple effects going in different directions.
Right.
But why is it for you the most important decision in the Leonsis era?
I mean, so this is a guy that you drafted third overall. He went to Georgetown. He's local. He's a solid character guy. He's smart on defense. He does the things like cut and just things you don't often find as these sort of natural talents in a player these days. That said, Otto Porter has a lot of limitations. And so, and you have the other component that David Falk is his agent, and that he has such a history not only with like A. Poland, but even carrying over to John Wall. And I think I saw you tweet this earlier. You sort of retweeted David Aldridge's tweet about the Otto Porter situation. And I went and actually looked at it after you tweeted. There are a lot of reactions to that in terms of what the expectations are in how Otto Porter's negotiations will play out, what he will get. And so there are just a lot of things in that situation that make this a little bit more of a wild card. I know, you know, you feel that Otto Porter would come back. He will be back. And I think I have the same sort of feeling as you do, but how much is such a critical component here? And the fact that his agent is David Falk makes this even more of a wild card, I guess. And the Wizards are very much at risk of overpaying him at this point when we still don't know, like, Otto Porter's potential as a player. We can't even see it.
Look, man, I think you make a lot of good points. You know, the agent's job is to make the best deal for his client. We typically view the best deal for the client in terms of the amount of money. I mean, you know what? As somebody who you and I were discussing before we started talking about, I'd like more money. you know what? I can respect the idea of getting whatever you can get. I think we all do that when it comes to our line of work. Of course, it's a completely different deal talking about the amount of money any of us are probably making at our jobs and how that affects the overall company. I doubt any of us when we agree to terms with somebody, it makes or breaks the situation. Maybe they have budgets, but they don't have salary caps, you know. So Otto Porter signing for X, Y, or Z could impact a lot of things. But in terms of that idea of doing what's best for your client, you know what? I've been around Otto Porter since the day he got to Georgetown, but I don't pretend I know him on a real life level that deep. I mean, I know a little bit, but I'm not going to say like I know a ton. But just based on being around this guy, if I was advising David Falk on what's best for his client, I think you want Otto Porter to stay here. Not just because of John Wall, but clearly that would be a big factor. John Wall is the type of player who will make Otto Porter better, get the most out of him. But also, I mean, I know Otto Porter goes to Georgetown a lot on, you know, off days or whatever it is to be around that situation. That was his family. He never had been on a plane until he went to visit Georgetown. I mean, that is the place where he grew up. And, you know, Otto Porter, part of the reason why I think people get frustrated with him sometimes is he's so low-key, he's so low-ego that we look for more demonstrative action. That's why Kelly Oubre can go 3-for-13 in a game, but he has one play, and everybody's like, oh, my God, look how great Kelly Oubre is. Because when he does it, it looks like the poster is going to look, right? It looks so exciting. And I think that for Otto, I think being around the environment he's familiar with would be helpful. Even if he signs for a lot of money, I think we're all going to look at it. I was like, hey, fine. But if he goes to another place with that money and they now have high expectations for this guy who's coming in, I fear how that would go. So if David Falk is looking out for the best of his client overall, not just financially, then I think they figure out a way to keep Otto here and do it in a way that would help the Wizards. That said, I'm not expecting that at all because that's not how these things typically work. It's pretty rare to see somebody go that route. And I don't know how demonstrative Otto Porter and his family are going to be with David Falk in saying, hey, you need to, you know, make him, get him to stay here rather than, you know, force their hand and, potentially, maybe even not have him stay.
No, that's a great point. And I'll get back to Aldridge's tweet, which I think people reacted to the phrasing of his tweet. It says something like the Wizards will get first crack, which, Otto is a restricted free agent. Obviously, the Wizards will have final say, but I don't know if that means they get, they necessarily get first crack. So, Aldridge's tweet was true in that, they don't have to start negotiating with Washington first. They can sort of go out and solicit deals that the Wizards would have to match. The Wizards could not want to negotiate and say, all right, go out and test the market. But it sounds like they're at least going to try to meet a middle ground, which makes, your point pretty valid in that, maybe Falk is listening to his client and looking out for, a good situation and a good balance with money. You still think the Wizards might overpay just to keep someone that they drafted. And that's understandable. And then I think another good point that Kevin Pelton make is that, the fact that he's a restricted free agent does have a chilling effect on Otto's market. And so when you think about the teams with cap room, is Sean Marks in the Brooklyn Nets really going to hang their hat at throwing a ton of money at Otto Porter, that he's just going to get into a new environment? And this is something that your point exactly, other teams are aware of, that he grew up in D.C., he's just sort of from small town Missouri. They sort of get the whole environment of Otto. So is another team really going to hang their hat at paying him a lot of money when he is not, he doesn't have that. He's fourth fiddle. He's, I think at best he's fourth fiddle, or he's a great guy off the bench. He's never going to be your third guy. But still, I think a Bullets Forever tweet earlier today, he might be the highest paid Wizard nonetheless, in, a few short weeks or days or what have you.
Before I let it get away, because I know we're going to talk, there'll be plenty about more Otto Porter conversation in the from the little I've heard so far of the people who've chimed in, friends of the podcast. But you said earlier that there was something you thought that the Kevin Pelton podcast was the best podcast you've heard of all time, but you had one quibble.
Yeah, it was the very end when he started talking about John Wall, and I get the practicality, and I get who Mr. Kelm is. Then when he gets to
Kyle
career, meaning last year and a year before.
Okay.
Right. And I'm sure there may have been reaction on the internet to that, that I didn't see. And that's sort of understandable to make that statement. But then
back up for a second. You broke up for a second there. What was the statement that Pelton made that you took issue with?
Oh, sorry about that. It started with declaring that, we might have just seen the best 2 years of John Wall's career, which, again, maybe analytically that could be the right thing given Wall's age, what have you. But then when, I'll reiterate, I think Pelton is really good. He had a great podcast. But then when you're using words like declining phase and different things like that, I'm like, why do you even watch sports? And I'm a little bit, I'm obviously have my hat in the game following the Wizards when he, obviously does that. But I'm like, oh, that was so disappointing to hear, to end on the John Wall depression call.
I hear. I think he was saying this past year and then maybe the next year, we could be seeing the two best years of his career. And, I'm sure at some point in my career, in doing covering sports, I've read articles about certain players or maybe a league wide look at at what age do players start to decline. John Wall is 26. He turns 27 in December. Presumably, that is definitely the sweet spot of somebody's career. So, if Kevin said this year or next year, I think is what he said. Maybe I'm wrong. So, so that takes you up to 27. Even if we extend it out another year or so, I think he was sort of taking it off of me asking him if he signs an extension like a 5-year extension. He's got like what, 2 years left on this contract, right? So those 2 years take him out to 28. If you sign a 5-year extension after that, it takes you out to 33. And I think my question was, is there any point for the Wizards to consider not giving him that contract? Because the type of player that John Wall is it possible his decline could be a little bit steeper? So I'd have to go back and hear exactly what we both said. But I know for me, look, I don't think there's any way the Wizards can't bring John Wall back. And I suspect he'll be fine and an all-star and all that for the next several years. But unless his jump shot gets better, I definitely do wonder if his decline, whenever it is, will be a little bit steeper than, say, like a Chris Paul, who can still, you know, who can shoot that three-pointer and whose game isn't totally predicated on speed.
No, that's totally a fair point. And I would say Chris Paul definitely, his shot got better. He wasn't, I don't believe he was always a shooter. He is now, and a lot of players aren't, if they are the type like Chris Paul who will improve their game, who, like John Wall, we've seen his jump shot improve. I don't know if he'll ever become maybe the three-point shooter Chris Paul is, or maybe he will.
I mean, by the way, Chris Paul's a career 37% three-point shooter, and basically his first year in the league, he stunk. But from that point on, he's been pretty good.
Okay, so you have access to the statistics here. But I think if we're really looking at, all right, do you give Wall the extension he's eligible for because that all NBA third team, you know, yeah, you have to. And when you're getting into some of the analytical talk about like stats and decline, you're not necessarily factoring in like what is the value of having a guy like John Wall on your team, not only from sort of the personality leadership standpoint, but even if his skills decline, I think he's become such this refined passer. He's always going to be able to set guys up, and I think he's going to get smarter at setting guys up. It's not going to be always about pushing and speed and corner threes. I think you have to factor these different things in that just weren't necessarily part of the picture of the end of that podcast.
Oh, I hear it would have been better to end it on a higher note. I'm with you on that alone. And, you know, at the end of the day, I will say this to sort of veer it back into this conversation that we're talking about. You know, I did a sample audio of a 1 or 2 minute hit that I was, you know, just to give people a guide, and I sent it to you and some other people, and I don't know if you bothered listening to it, but like I had, so like, okay, what topic am I going to come up with? So for me, the topic was, what are the Wizards doing with Marcin Gortat and Jan Mahimi? I mean, as Kevin Pelton was saying, there may not be much of a market out there for Gortat, considering his age, considering the way the game is evolving away from his type of player. Maybe, and you know, he's got, what, 2 years left? Maybe the Wizards really can't get much of a market. And look, Gortat, you know, I know a lot of people get frustrated with him, but he does a lot of good things for this team. You know, led the league in screen assists. You guys have heard that 100 times. But, you know, for the most part, he's pretty quiet. He's willing to do the dirty work and not get, you know, not get tons of shots. So on and so on. So I wouldn't just say get rid of him just to get rid of him. I'm not of that ilk. But I am very curious to see what his market is if, in fact, they do make a move. But to tie this back in with this John Wall thing, I think I have now decided, I guess this ties in with everything we've now talked about. I think I've now decided that I think the most interesting thing for the Wizards this offseason is do they get a deal done with John Wall now? He is eligible to do this contract, you know, this extra contract extension. And if they don't get one done now, meaning before this offseason, you know, before next offseason, they will be in the exact position that the Indiana Pacers are in right now. He'll have 1 year left, and who knows? So, you know, will John Wall leave? You know, the basic deal is there's different variables, but the basic deal is he'll get a lot more money if he stays with the Wizards. But Chris Paul would have got a lot more money to stay with the Clippers, and he said, I'm out. And John Wall, you know, if the Wizards, we just sort of said at the top, I don't know if realistically the Wizards are going to be a Eastern Conference favorite by any stretch, right? They'll probably be a good rung behind Cleveland and maybe Boston. So what is John Wall thinking? So I think to me, this is the most interesting part of this offseason is what do the Wizards do? How does Otto Porter fit into that? Do they really make a run at Paul George? If not, do they get somebody else? What can they do to both make John Wall happy, and does John Wall decide, hey, you know what, either way, I kind of want to stay here. I like what we've got here. That's, for me, what I think is the most interesting part of this offseason now, even though he himself is under contract for two more years.
I disagree.
Go ahead. That's what you're here for.
Well, I think it's not very interesting at all. I think John Wall is going to stay in D.C. I think he likes D.C. And one thing I point to that sort of signals this, at least for the next, you know, all right, re-upping now, is that now he's openly recruiting guys. Like, you know, you'll hear him talk about in the media, like, he may have openly recruited guys in the past just personally. But I think we've seen a switch where Wall used to say, like, ah, you know, like, I don't need to recruit anybody.
He said that last month.
He's doing that now.
He said that last month.
Yeah. No, I think he gets it. He's sort of recruiting Paul George. I'm sure he will try to do that.
What is recruiting Paul George doing, though? Like, literally, if he's legitimately going to recruit, he should go legitimately recruit somebody who can sign here.
I mean, I think he does appreciate Bill, and I think, you know, that the last summer, all the hubbub over you know, Wall's comments that ignited all the internet coverage of them not liking each other on the court. I think that actually probably made them appreciate each other even more. So I think Wall sees a core in D.C., but so part of it is he wants to stay here. He's going to recruit guys and see what he can build, but part of it is a challenge to management, obviously. But I think he likes what he can build himself here, and he appreciates that. And he was the first to get here. It was 2010, so many things changed. John Wall's number one overall draft pick. He was told from day one, like, this franchise, you have the keys to this franchise. And granted, you think people are connected to a franchise before. You thought Durant was connected to Oklahoma City, obviously, because he got drafted by the Sonics and then they moved there. But I think at least for, if you're thinking about the prospects of the next 5 years or what have you, for John Wall at least re-upping with this franchise this summer, it's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, look, I view the recruiting thing sort of in two ways. Okay, first of all, we're going to talk about what he said about Paul George and how people took it as a slight to Otto Porter. But beyond that, I think that was an example of John Wall sometimes says things that people take out of context. I mean, you've been around him, of course. He says things sort of direct and blunt sometimes, but when he says it, he doesn't always like mean it with the same edge. I think the written word comes across, and I think that's what happened in the Otto Porter thing. So in the same case of the recruiting Paul George, I don't know. I need to hear this. I believe I asked him the question after they lost to the Celtics, are you going to recruit players this summer? He's like, nah, not doing that. They see what's going on here. I believe that on some level more than I do the other. But if he is, in fact, recruiting, it makes me think, well, if you're recruiting, I don't know. I mean, it seems like you're a little bit – if he felt pretty good about what's going on here, why would you need to recruit Paul George if you like what Otto Porter does and can help you? Even though he said Paul George is better, we'd all agree he is. That doesn't seem – like, it seems like why would you recruit – for that spot in particular, if you already like the guy you have,
Ben,
some level of doubt.
Come on, Ben. Are you actually questioning the whole like Paul George versus Otto Porter? I know you're not directly doing that, but
I don't believe he slighted Otto Porter at all.
I don't believe he did either. But it's not like a position. It's not like, oh, that guy plays Otto's position. It's like get talent and let people fit in, and that's what other teams are doing. I think Wall sees like sort of what Golden State went through, what Houston's doing now, and you know, I don't think you always factor in like who plays what position and the minutes divvy up. It's like, let's get the talent in here and things will figure it out. And that's I think that's Wall's confidence in maybe himself as being a leader, maybe Scott Brooks and being able to figure it out. At least you feel a lot more in this team's locker room and coaching staff now than you do the front office.
Yeah. Well, anyway, like I said, I just think that look, if you made me bet today, will John Wall eventually sign that extension? I'd say yes. I would assume he would. If for no other reason, that's a lot of money. You don't leave it on the table. But I don't know. I mean,
well, my point is there's a lot more interesting things that happen this summer than whether John Wall signs for more time as opposed to being with his team at least for two more years before I would say he likely resigns.
But let's
things change really fast.
Well, let's say they keep Otto Porter to a max contract, even whatever it is, right? The basic deal is, look, if they do that, Otto Porter, again, as Pelton pointed out, he's the type of player teams want to have, a young role player who's really good, who does a lot of stuff. You pretty much have to keep him for the max, even if that's what it costs, is the way Pelton viewed it. And I think that's probably reasonable and fair, especially because the Wizards just don't have a lot of other outs. But if they do that, then obviously John Wall, Bradley Beal, and Otto Porter are making a ton of money. They're pretty limited to what else they can do. We know they don't have any draft picks. Unless Kelly Oubre really sort of blows up this year and actually turns into a trade asset that they can go out and get somebody else, they probably won't be able to do too many other things. So John Wall is going to be in a position where, well, this is what we have, but Boston's presumably going to get a lot better. So where are the Wizards going? On the other side, if they let Otto Porter go, they can't even really I'm not a cap guru, but it doesn't seem like they can even do that much now to replace him. Even if they just bring back Bogdanovich, I mean, that in and of itself weakens you in other ways. They can't even do that much now. So they'd probably take a step back from the 49 wins. Is John Wall going to look at that and say, boy, this is fantastic? So that's why, to me, even though I'm with you, he's likely to stay. How they maneuver this and how he views it, I think could be really, really interesting, one way or the other.
Well, yeah, that's why I get back to how they deal with Porter is the most important thing. Much less like considering how they would replace him now if he left, you have to consider the implications of what his salary would be on the team if you're overpaying him for the next several years. Because I guess the salary cap isn't, going up as much or didn't go as much up as much as expected. And I can't remember. I think I read something where it might even go down next year. You have, of course, the ESPN has the NBA TV deal locked up for a while, but it was certainly an interesting Sports Business Journal read in terms of how, people felt that ESPN overpaid for the NBA deal, just to keep it away from another, another network. And you just wonder, looking even several years down the road, like, what does that look like for the landscape of this league if suddenly like the TV deal changes in several years? I mean, I think the NBA is set up from and not to get on off too much off of Wizards free agency, but like digitally and internationally, the NBA is set up well, but you just wonder how much teams are factoring in sort of the wild contracts that happened last summer, the summer before, versus things maybe leveling off or like sort of dropping over the next, 3 to 5 years, and what, giving someone a lot of money now will look like a few seasons down the road. So I think that's why they have to, really draw a hard line in the sand with Otto, and the implications of this deal will be, again, if you talk about Wall, whether that happens, the most interesting thing, it's the Otto Porter thing to me. I'll still say that.
I'll move off of that since we both chimed in there. Let me ask you a quick this. What are your percentage chances that Paul George ends up with, regardless of what the cost actually is, what percentage chances Paul George ends up here? Just give me the percentage chance. Ends up here this year.
17%.
17%.
Is that? I almost went 15, but 17%. Let's go with that.
Is that an homage to NBA player association vice president Garrett Temple?
Yeah. That, as soon as you said homage, I was like, Ben's gonna say something about Garrett Temple.
17%. Okay, and you know what? I might not even go that high, but okay, that's fine. That allows for anything to happen, and we'll see. But I hope just people out there, look, you never know what's going to happen, but I just hope people out there, when they see tweets, when they see other people talking about it, like, I'm not doing a ton of writing these days for the Wizards. I'm doing a few things over at FanRag, but nothing. I'm not writing about it 4 days a week. I don't have that obligation to do, you know, I know you guys are truth about it, do a lot of stuff, but, you know, you've got a lot of things going on in your world. So I don't think either one of us are contributing too much to this idea that Paul George could be here. We're not making some sort of a headline about that. I fear, though, when I look at other people out there that keep talking about Paul George, whenever somebody mentions it, hey, the Wizards are, I hope people don't think, or I'm curious what you think. I'm concerned that some people may be getting led down a path where they think that the Wizards are really in the mix for Paul George. And then when Paul George gets traded to Boston, would be my guess, or Cleveland, or whatever it is, or maybe it's Houston. Oh, the Wizards, you know, whatever. I don't really think they can be in this realistically at all. I don't even see how this is a discussion. Unless you're telling me that Indiana has an infatuation with Kelly Oubre, or Otto Porter is going to take significantly less money based on how the sign and trades work to go there, this isn't even a conversation. Well, I don't even understand what we're discussing it as I'm discussing it, but I'm discussing the discussion.
No, you're right, because we're sort of in this landscape, and the Wizards have been in this landscape since 2003. And that, yeah, Grunfeld might have a trick or two up his sleeve every once in a while, a Caron Butler for Kwame Brown or a Paul Pierce, which I don't know if we're going to totally give him credit for, because we'll credit Sam Cassell for that. But the Wizards, in terms of how they really, and this is tough because there are only a few like really big innovators as GMs in the league. A lot of guys are risk adverse because it's such a short, it tends to be such a, like a short, you know, average career for a GM, I'm guessing. You know, Grunfeld breaks the mold, and I think Leonsis trusts him, and part of it is that Ted Leonsis is okay with slowly and steady building something better as opposed to the crappy basketball team that existed forever under A. Poland since, you know, the late 70s. And so I think he is, in some regards, not as entrepreneurial as you would think he would be for what got him to be where he is, you know, through AOL and now he's, you know, Snag Films or the whatnot. It's just funny that this team is not like a mover and shaker like other teams sometimes show themselves to be. Again, free agency hasn't started. Things could get nuts. You never know what the Wizards might pull, but the fact that you're so skeptical and we're all skeptical, or we're all just feeling like, yeah, they're going to keep Otto and kind of once again hope player development and growth and everything is just going to do the trick. I think that is the environment we know the Wizards are in. They're not, let's do something crazy and compete in this ever-changing environment. They're, let's sort of play it slow and play our cards close to the chest and sort of be cool about it. And, you know, as fans who have been starved for so long for just a team to make the playoffs or get to 500, you know, you really have to think about what you want and how much you are elevating your expectations on a season by season basis versus this is what this franchise has become. I think we all want to see better just because of how amazing John Wall is. You know, how good Bradley Beal could be. We want to see better around them for those guys to be able to take this team somewhere most of all. And so that's why, you know, I just keep coming back to this is going to be an interesting summer, not like every summer isn't. But, you know, what the Wizards do for everything we've talked about and what Grunfeld has left, I mean, is this his last shot? I'm sure we can probably say no, but maybe it could be.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if this is a matter of them being risk adverse in this case. I think it's a matter of them having traded away more or less their draft for the last 4 years. So, or maybe more to the point, like the whatever extra moves that they had have not led to picking up other pieces. Like if you look at the trade that Houston just made with Chris Paul, I mean, Patrick Beverley was a guy they kind of found off the scrap heap, more or less, right? I mean, I think. And he's turned into a really good player. They traded a first-round pick last year to get Mo Williams at the time that the Wizards did a similar trade to get Bogdanovich. they flipped, but Williams had another year.
Lou Williams.
Lou Williams, he had another year on his contract. Bogdanovich doesn't. They're able to flip Lou Williams as part of that trade. They added Sam Decker, a recent first-round pick, Montrezl Harrell, a guy I really liked coming to the draft as a second-round pick, and then they're doing some of these other adding some other non-guaranteed contracts to make the deal worth. The Wizards just don't have any of that stuff. I mean, they have Kelly Oubre. You know, then they don't have that other thing. And I know this is the part where people are yelling through their podcast listening devices. Yes, this is why we want to get rid of Grunfeld. I'm not saying that. I mean, so many other moves they made. They traded a first round pick to get Gortat because Emeka Okafor got hurt, and Ted Leonsis at that point put it sort of made it clear, make the playoffs or bust. The Marquise Morris trade, I have zero problem with. That guy has got 2 years left in his contract. He's young. He's super cheap. That one's great. The Bogdanovich one, you know what? Obviously, that was sort of factored into the other moves that were made last offseason, which I don't think I don't think either one of us were big fans of most of those moves at the time. I think we were basically we were in Vegas, I'm pretty sure, spending many day and night there, going through every single move, going, oh boy, what the heck is going on here? And so that's the thing. I just don't think they have. They don't seem to ever be playing from ahead. They always seem to be playing from behind on some level, and that's why they don't have these extra pieces to do these other moves. All right, there you go. Part one of my conversation with Kyle Wiedeheim. More about free agency and the Wizards situation in part two, plus the promised clips from friends of the podcast about what they would do this offseason. What do they see as the biggest key for the Wizards? Fun one there. Thank you guys, as always, for listening. Signing off here, Ben Standing. Until next time, see you.
Deal gets open for three. Dagger!
Long drive, long shot. Dagger!